Okay. We ended last week by describing how while in the Midbar things might have seemed inconvenient, people didn't appreciate it enough at the time. Once they were ready to enter Eretz Yisrael, once all the lights of the Midbar started shutting down, as we said, the sun turned off, night fell, all of a sudden people started realizing retroactively what they had. And therefore, yes, as Chazal tell us, the first words of Sefer Yeshua are Vayehi Acharei, which Chazal say show different instances around Tanakh where that denotes a sad period. Vayehi Acharei Moshe Eved Hashem. So I just want to complete that point by describing, after we described all the inconveniences of the Midbar last week, to show how people actually, yes, you had the people who complained about it and didn't maximize the benefits and just started waking up to appreciate it more afterwards. But what did the person look like, the one who did at the time take good advantage of everything that period had to offer? What did he look like? So let's go back and discuss a few of the different phenomena of the Dor HaMidbar that we discussed last week. So first of all, as we discussed, people, the Anon, the clouds, and also the Man, as we'll discuss soon, were subjecting people to all kinds of different inconvenient experiences, moving them to places where they might not want to be, moving them at times when they might not want to move, then dafka keeping them in places for a long time. People learned to realize in a very clear way, like we alluded to last week, that all these different annoyances are coming straight from Hashem. And they learned to respond in kind. Meaning, the story that we sometimes tell, a certain Rebbe once came to the Bis Medrash came late one morning to the Bis Medrash. All the Talmidim were waiting, came 45 minutes late to the Shiur. So Talmidim were wondering what happened. He was usually very punctual. So the Rebbe says, "Today Hashem spoke to me. Today Hashem spoke to me." All the Chassidim got all excited. They were sure that Hashem speaks to the Rebbe, but he never admitted it. So they're all waiting to hear. What did Hashem tell the Rebbe? So he said, "I'll tell you what happened. This morning I woke up, I couldn't find my left shoe. When I was ready to leave for the Bis Medrash, I couldn't find my left shoe. And I searched and searched and searched for 45 minutes. Until finally I found it, and now I'm here." Okay, and we're waiting for the punchline. But there's no punchline, that's the end of the story. He said Hashem spoke to you. Yeah, Hashem told me this morning, my plan for you today is I want you to look for your shoe for 45 minutes. That's what Hashem said, so I accepted. In other words, we would have said, or we might have said, hope we wouldn't say, we might say, "Oh, what the kids do with my shoes, where'd my wife put my shoe?" This person heard Hashem coming with a message to him. I want you to look for your shoe now for 45 minutes. Inconvenience, but that's what Hashem planned for me for today. I planned one thing for today, Hashem had something else in mind. And I accept it as the word of Hashem. If so, looking for your shoes turns into a mitzvah. Turns into a mitzvah accepting Hashem's decree. People in the Midbar got a very, very thorough training in this. You couldn't get around it. Today, you can attribute it to this, you can attribute it to that. My wife put it in the wrong place. But in those days, you saw it was the Shechina, right? We discussed last week, when you finally got all the kids settled in bed, and the cloud rose up, it was nothing else. It was just the Shechina. People went through a very serious training system, and those who responded right really came away from the Midbar, from a 40-year training session, with the very clear understanding, the way they instinctively reacted to inconveniences, frustrations, things going wrong, was a job from Hashem, a demand from Hashem. This was how they reacted. How about the man? Where did you get food from every morning? You know where you got food from. You left your tent and you gathered the man from outside. But where was it? Well, it depends how you behaved yesterday. if you behaved right, the monk was right outside the door. Then the monk could be anywhere from there and a long distance away, depending on yesterday's performance. Here also, if we think about it, so we're just taking a very superficial way. Yeah, the guy didn't act right. Okay, so next day he had to go schlep for his monk. There was a lot more going on here. How often do we kid ourselves when we're faced with tests or temptations and we say, it's really okay, this, that. So we're not sure whether we're kidding ourselves, but we give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. You know, I'm not sure. Should I be acting this way? Should I be handling the situation this way? I'll just go ahead. What I told that person back in Shul, was that the right thing to say? He deserved it. It was really mutter. Under the circumstances, there was benefit, etc. Right? I convinced myself. In the time of Midbar, you could do that up to 24 hours. The next morning, it was a psak from Hashem, whether you were kidding yourself or whether you were really wrong. There was no getting around it. You know, you kept telling yourself that, okay, what I told my wife about the other guy, it was really okay. Really, it was okay, because it was the toyeles, and it wasn't really lashon hara. But then, the next morning, when the mun was further away, you were slapped with the reality in the face. There was no getting around it. After this happened, once, twice, people started learning to be more honest with themselves. Right? People were able to make the right decisions. When you really know that the next day it's going to be thrown in your face, after a while you stop making the right decisions beforehand, you stop kidding yourself. People who came out of the Dor HaMidbar came out after, again, a rigorous training session of being able to really see through themselves. And they developed a very, very, very strong discipline, which they were expected to be able to take away with them when they left the Midbar. This was a training. Now they had it in their blood. Now they already attained the capability of being honest with themselves. In the Midbar, what were people doing all day? People weren't making a living. There was no jobs to be had, and you didn't need a job because you had all your needs provided for you. The Midbar was just one big yeshiva. They were busy learning Torah all the time. That's what they were doing. It was very, very important. The Torah was being given throughout the 40 years in the Midbar. Another halacha was being introduced. Another halacha was being introduced. And Klal Yisrael would apply themselves very vigorously to learn the halachas and also to learn Hashem. It was really what the Midbar was a honeymoon. Right? That's how the pasuk refers to it in the Navi that says, Zochati lo chesed nuraich, avas klu lesoich, lechtecha acharai b'midbar b'eretz lo yizuruah. I remember the love of the early days of our marriage, when you followed me out into the Midbar, was a honeymoon. We were getting to know Hashem. We were going to have a long relationship with Hashem, one that's going to span all of history until Mashiach comes and beyond. The Midbar was getting to know Hashem. That's what they spent their time doing in the Midbar, learning Hashem and learning His Torah. And whenever a question came up, how did you deal with a question? It was taken for granted. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem and you got the answer. You have to understand the significance of this stopping. After the Dor HaMidbar, like we said, the sunshine turned off. From this point in history and on, there is no such thing as asking Hashem halacha questions anymore. Lo yibashamayim. Once the Torah was given, the Torah finished being given at the end of the Dor HaMidbar, now there's no such thing as resolving questions by asking Hashem. Now it's up to you to figure it out. You're left with your own devices. Imagine what kind of shock this was to the Bnei Yisrael. What are you supposed to do when there's a question? We're supposed to resolve it by ourselves? Ask Hashem. No, Hashem doesn't give answers anymore. That's what actually happened. It says that during the Avil of Moshe, by the time the days of mourning finished, they started reviewing, 3,000 sfeikas came up. And they told Yeshua, okay, discussing it, they couldn't reach they couldn't get an answer. They told Yeshua, okay, you're in place of Moshe, go ask Hashem. Yeshua asked Hashem, and Hashem said, nothing doing. We're past that point in history. I gave the Torah. That's it. Now it's down on earth. Figure it out yourselves. This was very scary. It was such a shock to the Jewish people that you know what their reaction was? They were ready to kill Yeshua. How could that be? They were ready to kill Yeshua. Hashem told him, you have to go distract them. But again, this is just marking the extremity of the transition from the Dor HaMidbar into the Dor Yehoshua. Mamish, the lights turned off. Therefore, yes, all of Klal Yisrael was in complete shock. They lost Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeshua was sitting in mourning. Hashem says, Moshe Avdi Meis, Kibiyachal, Hashem is mourning. Right? Moshe Avdi Meis, my servant Moshe is dead. It's the end of an era. That's it. It's a great step down. So now what? Klal Yisrael was sitting and lamenting. Sitting in mourning. How long is that going to go on? Spend the rest of history mourning? That's an approach. Hashem tells Yeshua, Kum! Get up! There's a future. 1 minute, now you got to move on to the next stage. It's true. The previous period was a period that will never be returned. It's a period of greatness that now you could just look back and longing. But you have to realize that now there's a period of extreme greatness ahead of you. The truth is, in a sense, the Dor HaMidbar wasn't really a part of what this world was meant to be. They were living a completely supernatural existence, which was really just preparation for their real function. What's the real function? The real function is to land back in Olam Hazeh, and to be able to serve Hashem in Olam Hazeh. It was just a training for that. And now, right? For example, we're given a mitzvah of sukkah. As soon as we enter Eretz Yisrael, get the mitzvah of sukkah. It's a mitzvah of sukkah. In order to remember the Anane HaKovet, the clouds of glory. What does the Torah say? The Torah says, you should sit in sukkahs in order to remember that the way I sat Klal Yisrael in sukkahs back in the Midbar. There's a machlokes in the Gemara what that means. What exactly are we commemorating when we are sitting in the sukkah? So one shita says, we're commemorating the Anane HaKovet. Right? That's what we're doing with the sukkah. It's very well understood. Commemorating one of the greatest nisim of our history warrants no less of a commemoration than the Ten Makas, Pesach. We commemorate living in the Anane HaKovet for the 40 years. But Rabbi Akiva says no. They lived in huts in the Midbar, and that's what we're commemorating. But they lived in huts. So the question is, what's the special commemoration of that? Especially since it sounds like the Pasuk says, I want you to remember that I settled you in Sukkot. In the Midbar. Hashem is saying, I want you to remember how I settled you in the clouds of glory. Okay. What's he saying? I want you to remember how I settled you in little flimsy huts. Never forget that. So that's why we live in the flimsy huts in Sukkot. What's the idea? The answer is, and this on the contrary, this brings out the point that really our main challenge is the post-Midbar period. The answer is, living in huts in the Midbar was not a simple thing. The Midbar was an unlivable area. Right? It says it was an area that didn't really support life. They lived in flimsy huts with the full realization that they can't survive by natural means at all. On the contrary, the flimsy huts were what brought out the fact that they lived solely, completely dependent on Hashem's protection. And therefore, what we're being told is, and this is what this lesson of Sukkot is for us today also, today, now you have homes, now you live in stone houses. You have to remember that your stone house is Hashem's means of protecting you today. Don't think, in the Midbar we were very, very dependent. Now we're less needy. Now we have stone houses. Now we have solid structures. Now we have food. We can grow our own food. Right? Now we can earn our own living. Now we can take our faith. We can take ourselves into our own hands. So Hashem says, no, that was part of, don't forget the lesson of the Midbar. Your job now is, and this is our job today, this is basically a very central part of our function. We highlighted on Sukkot what we're supposed to be doing this all the time, is to be able to realize this is really the function of Olam Hazeh. To be able to live within the natural circumstances with the understanding that, no, it's all Hashem. The house is Hashem protecting you, and the food is Hashem giving you man. Right? That's why we commemorate the man also. Lechem Mishneh is in commemoration of the man. That's why also there's a din on Leil Shabbos to have a cover on top and beneath the chalas, just like the man. It's covered with layers of dew over and beneath. We're meant to relive the experience of the man, meaning try as much as you can to live that feeling that food is being given to you directly from Hashem. So the truth is, on the contrary, in a sense, the Jews are stepping up into a greater mission now. Up till now, it didn't really count. Up till now, you're living openly with Hashem. It was all really a training session to be able to enter this world and show if you can really do it. Can you really fulfill the function of this world? Now they're entering. So Hashem tells Yeshua, Kum, don't just sit and mourn the olden days. You have a job to do. Now is really when the function of the Bnei Yisrael are starting. The function of the Bnei Yisrael is to live Hashem in Olam Hazeh. In Olam Haba, anybody can live Hashem. That's what, to an extent, that's what they were doing in the Midbar. Can you live Hashem in Olam Hazeh? Now's when the job starts. Now you're going on stage. Wake up. Don't just sit and say, ooh, it was so great when we were being trained. Get up and face the challenge. So therefore, the truth is that all throughout history we're faced with the two sides of the coin. On the one hand, always looking back at the previous generations in awe with longing. But on the other hand, you have to realize that the here and now holds a mission, holds a special mission that the previous generations did not hold. And the here and now provide opportunities that the previous generation did not have. And also more than that, you have to realize that the here and now, you're busy lamenting about the glorious past. You have to realize that the here and now might be the glorious past of a few generations down the road. So you're wasting your time lamenting about what happened in the past. Rachmana Litzlan, if you forget about the present might also turn into the past. That's what I believe was it Nachman Mibreslov who said, the worst present is still much better than any conceivable time in the future. You have to make sure the present is all you have. You don't know if there's going to be a future at all. Now we'll think about it. The truth is, the Jews, this is how the pattern of history went. The Jews in the time of Yeshua, now they were wise enough to be able to appreciate retroactively the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. What do we have left now? Yeshua. It's like the moon in comparison with the sun. What do we have left now? But then, a few generations went by, and suddenly they started realizing we should have taken advantage of the days of Yeshua. The days of Yeshua were not the days of Moshe. But yet, the days of Yeshua were very, very great days. It says, for example, the term. It says when Hashem is telling Moshe, or let's go even further back. It says that when Hashem is taking the Jews out of Mitzrayim, the Egyptians come chasing them. It's Vayohom Hashem is Machan Mitzrayim. Hashem confused the camp of Mitzrayim, right? Then it says, Hashem tells Moshe, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, Vahamoisi kol ha'am, I will confuse the nations that are ahead of you in order to get them out of the way. It says, Taka, that Hashem confused the Knani before Yeshua. This term, Vayaham, Hamoisi, Mehuma, is used a few times in Tanakh up until a certain period. We wouldn't note the significance. But Chazal noted that it says, yes, Hashem confused the Mitzrayim before the Jews. Hashem confused the Knani before Yeshua. And then it says a little later down the road, Hashem confused the Knani before Devorah and Sisra. Hashem confused the Plishtim before Shmuel. But that's all. There was no more confusion after that. After that, there were still wars, and they were very successful in their wars, but there was no confusion. What is this confusion about? Don't know yet. Let's see. Well, what is this confusion about? One thing that Chazal note is, whatever it was, the confusion stopped at the days of Shmuel. And then it's mentioned one more time. Hashem will confuse the Goyim at the end of time. Shmuel, the confusing stopped. Now, the truth is, I don't know what the confusion is. But one thing that Chazal say is, this was a style of battle that the Jews had up until the time of Shmuel and Navi. After that, no more. Shaul and David were very mighty warriors, and they led Klal Yisrael to glorious victories, supernatural victories. But apparently there was something going on in the earlier days that didn't at all have the form of a natural battle. Didn't even have the form of a supernatural battle. I don't know what it looked like. There was something above the wars of Shaul and David I didn't see the way the words of Sheol and Dovid are described. But there was something above that, something going on where Hashem is just coming in and making a salad. What it looked like, I don't know. But there was, it was a completely different reality of warfare. Basically, reality of warfare, they didn't do much. Just, you see a few examples of what we do know, what actually happened. In the times of Yeshua, right? They blow shofars, walls of the city collapse. But we don't see after the times of Sheol and Dovid anymore. Times of Sheol and Dovid, they had very, very mighty kings who were granted great success by Hashem, but it took the form of army coming with unbelievable strength, supernatural strength, and creaming their enemies. But just that idea of kind of coming, standing like this, and boom, the enemy just gets all zufleugen, that's what was going on. Time of Sisera and Devaira. What happened? Hashem just caused a lot of confusion in the Kenani camp. They got all mixed up, started tripping all over each other. The Jews kind of come up, and basically just have to clean up the job. They have to just kind of kill all the people who tripped. But the downfall and the all the mayhem, Hashem just did by himself. We didn't need an army for that. This was the Dor of Yeshua, right? A very great period, but they couldn't appreciate it because it already wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. It says that Klal Yisrael get a very, very good mark. Right? We know that the Navi is full of castigations. It says that Klal Yisrael served Hashem for all the days of Yeshua and all the days of the elders that followed him. This is, in terms of the Navi, this is an unbelievable mark. It was a very, very glorious period. After the last of those Kenim died, once again, the people suddenly woke up and said, "Ooh, we had with us people who actually witnessed the Ten Makas, people who witnessed the giving of the Torah. Why didn't we take advantage? We had a great period." But then it was over. So then again, people started lamenting. "Oh, we missed the glorious days of Yeshua and the elders who were with him. Ah, yeah, what now?" But they still had throughout the period of the Shoftim. It was a glorious period, like we discussed. Manifested in one way through that confusion. This went on all throughout the period of the Shoftim. Again, a period where just things ran on a completely different level of nature. Shimshon, we'll get to him. But we never again had in history an idea of a one-man army. That's basically what was going on in his period. It wasn't an army, it was one man who used to go out and fight. This was also a golden period. And then they made the mistake of asking for a king. Okay, it's a long discussion, we'll get to it. But after they asked for a king, suddenly they understood, "Oh, we didn't take advantage of the days when the Navi was just in charge in an informal and quiet way." So then they knew to regret the past. But what do we say today about the people living in the times of Dovid and Shlomo? If they were just busy lamenting, they also had a great period. But that's the way it works in Klal Yisrael, yes. The generations degenerate. Things go down. Otherwise, that's the way it is. You read us how there is. But yet, we can't live just lamenting the earlier periods. We have to realize that Hashem is providing us with opportunities today, and we have to take good advantage of them while they last. Why do we? What is the purpose of looking back at the earlier periods? Not in order to say, "Oy, we should have lived then." That's a form of apikosis. Because who planned the change of circumstances? That's all Hashem planning. Hashem puts you in a generation with a very specific purpose. He wants you to fulfill the purpose of that generation. Us in our generation. Right? We look back. We're always here. From all directions we hear about, "Oh, what a lowly generation we are. And how things were back in the times of, and in the times of, and in the times of," right? But we have to realize that our generation also, we have to realize that in our generation also, we have an opportunity that actually the earlier generations didn't have. So Shimshon Pinkas makes this point. It's something to keep in mind. We're in a generation today, up till recently, the Jews desperately needed Hashem. We were being persecuted. Right? It was just